You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time for our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court.
A couple of weeks ago, in our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court, we discussed multiple countries moving to formally recognise Palestinian statehood and what New Zealand's plans were in this regard. Last week, Foreign Minister Winston Peters said the country would carefully weigh its position over the next month in recognising the state of Palestine. During a debate in Parliament, the government's delay in recognising a Palestinian state, as opposed to other countries such as France, the UK, Canada and Australia, led Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick to refer to the country as an outlier and called for the government MPs with a spine to stand on the right side of history. This led to her being ordered to leave Parliament by Speaker Jerry Brownlee after refusing to apologise for her statement. As well as this, last week Education Minister Erica Stanford announced cancelling the early reading book at the Marae from its Ready to Read Phonics Plus series. The government's reasoning for this is through mixed evidence, suggesting that learning both English and Te Reo Māori for young learners could confuse them. The move has been widely criticised by linguists, academics and educators for being an act of racism and white supremacy. For our weekly catch-up with the ACT Party's Simon Court, producer Casta spoke to Simon about both of these topics, starting with recognising a Palestinian state.
So a couple of weeks ago, we discussed various countries such as France, Canada and the UK announcing their plans to formally recognise Palestine. Since then, Australia has also announced similar plans. ACT Party leader David Seymour says the country's recognition of Palestinian statehood is a matter of when, not if, and that this decision should not be rushed. How long, then, should we expect this decision to take?
Well, I think what's more important than the timing is to make sure that New Zealand has a firm set of principles we apply to this problem, because for the Palestinian people who are seeking their own state. Currently, if you live in Gaza, you've got a terrorist entity using the population as a human shield. That's not an ideal situation to become a state. And if you look at the other parts of the Palestinian territories, you know, they're controlled by the Palestinian Authority that hasn't had an election since 2006 and really struggles to maintain internal order and policing. So I think what's more important than the timing is to say, well, what should New Zealand's principled position be about this problem? And that should be that there needs to be the right security settings. Hamas needs to release the hostages and be disarmed. I mean, even Israel's Arab neighbours have suggested that should be the starting point. Otherwise, you know, as Foreign Minister Peters said when I asked him in the House a few weeks ago, is recognising a Palestinian state before those basic conditions are met, does that look like a reward for terrorism? And he agreed with me. So you know, I think what's more important is the conditions that New Zealand would propose rather than the timing.
Last week, we also saw Green Party co-leader Chloe Swarbrick. She was talking about, you know, differentiating this sort of situation, you know, differentiating the case of the terrorism, as you mentioned, and the humanity of the Palestinians in Gaza and in Palestine in general. We saw her kicked out of Parliament for a week for refusing to withdraw her comments calling for MPs to get a spine. She urged MPs to support her members' bill, which would sanction Israel for its war crimes in Gaza. MPs in the past have made similar comments. Former Prime Minister John Key in 2015 told the then opposition to get some guts and join the right side over sending New Zealand troops to Iraq. Key was not punished for this, so why was Swarbrick punished?
Well, it's against standing orders to impugn the character or motivations of other members of the House. And if we're going to run a parliamentary system, then people who come to Parliament to debate need to focus on the issues, on our policy differences, on where we actually share some consensus across the aisle, rather than pejoratives, calling people names, impugning their motivations. So, you know, Swarbrick needs to realise that if she's going to be participating in a parliamentary democracy, she brings her ideas, there's a contest of ideas, and we don't make personal ad hominem attacks. And the Speaker made it clear twice last week that that's unacceptable in the House. She came back a second day and tried to re-enter the House and take her seat. She was asked to apologise, said she wouldn't. So if she doesn't get the fact that you come to Parliament to debate in a civil way, I think she's really going to struggle.
We've seen the ACT Party push for the bill to strengthen free speech in universities, with accusations that universities were taking a risk-averse approach that reduced the diversity of opinions. How is this sort of thing any different?
Well, I didn't hear an opinion from Chloe Swarbrick about any policy matter. All I heard from her was an ad hominem attack on the character and motivations of other individuals. So, I mean, she is free to have that speech outside the House, but there are rules of the debating chamber that say that when you come to Parliament to debate legislation, you focus on policy. You don't attack people.
I think the opinion that Chloe Swarbrick was putting out, you know, is that the government should be recognising Palestinian statehood during this time of, you know, humanitarian crisis. And it seems to be an opinion that the government, you know, disagrees with, obviously because they haven't gone and agreed with Chloe's bill, but also because she got ejected from the House. How is this not just, you know, limiting opposing voices?
Chloe Swarbrick can be the opposing voice. But, I mean, even what you've described has conflated so many issues. There is a humanitarian crisis in Gaza. There is a terrorist entity that is using its own population as human shields. There are dozens of hostages still alive, and who knows how many bodies Hamas have got secreted around the place. I mean, if we just take a step back, recognising Palestinian statehood really is completely irrelevant in the circumstances of what Israel is facing and what the Palestinian people are facing right now. Chloe proposing to impose sanctions on a sovereign democratic nation whose people are being held hostage and who is fighting in what they consider to be an existential battle for the survival of their nation and its 10 million people, and to sanction them. I mean, it makes no sense. And so Chloe's free to have her opinion and, you know, to have it inside and outside of Parliament. But if you're coming to Parliament to propose policy and to debate issues, we just play it straight. We don't play the person. We don't call people names. We don't impugn their motivations. I just assume Chloe Swarbrick's motivations are pure and true and idealistic. I just fundamentally disagree with her. And we can have that disagreement without it having to be about the individual.
Moving on to our final topic, Education Minister Erica Sanford has discontinued the Early Reading Books Ready to Read Phonic Plus series as it has too many Māori words. Is this a move that the ACT Party supports?
Well, let's be clear why that series has been discontinued. It's because these are highly technical books called coding books that people learning to read for the first time in any language, whether it's Japanese or English or Te Reo Māori, need to have only the words in that language in the coding book. So this is one of the first few texts that children will get to read, and if they start having words dropped in from another language, it confuses the learning process. So this is just a highly technical early childhood literacy matter. It's actually got nothing to do with whether the language that was being dropped into the coding book is Japanese or Spanish or Te Reo Māori. And so I think that there's been a very unfortunate and probably deliberate conflation of the two things. They're removing Te Reo Māori words, but without actually being honest about what the purpose of that is. It's so that children learning to read can get the appropriate coding from the words on the page to fix in their head, this is how I read, and this is what the letters and words mean.
The basis for this ban is through mixed evidence that incorporating Te Reo Māori with English may confuse young children. However, when approached by RNZ, literacy experts say the use of Te Reo Māori, such as within these books, does not pose problems to young readers. What evidence does the government have to ban these books, and is it not better for young children to engage with Te Reo Māori, considering it's one of our official languages?
Well, they are absolutely able to engage with Te Reo Māori in the classroom. I'm sure they learn the days of the week and counting 1 to 10 and, you know, the weather, just like, you know, I had some exposure to when I was at school and my kids did when they were at school. But what we're talking about is 5-year-olds learning to read in one language at a time. And so I'm sure you could find experts who would say it doesn't really matter if they hear Tiriya words. That's not the point. This is about specific texts that are teaching children to read in a specific language. And so by all means, as they go on to their reading future, you know, if they see the word Aotearoa, or, you know, they see Rātapu, you know, Sunday, for example, you know, in a book, fine. But at age five, learning to read for the first time, one language, work it out, get it right, and then move on.
As New Zealand English uses a lot of te reo Māori words in day-to-day language anyway, such as kumara, mahi, pawa, whānau, would this not just confuse young children more? You know, shouldn't we be exposing them to this language that is not only used in everyday conversation but unique to our country at an early age?
Oh, I think you're conflating two different things. I mean, if people are dropping te reo Māori words into a sentence that is mostly using the English language, well, that might be common vernacular to them and their family or their community, but the English language is made up of English words. So, you know, this is not hard stuff. And I think, you know, we can all accept that in the New Zealand culture, in different circumstances, people are free to use whatever common term they like. You know, sweet potato, kumara, whānau, family. But if you're learning one language, you need to understand and learn the language that you're learning, and not have it all mixed together like some kind of fruity fruit salad.
Hang on, I'd just like to clarify. The English language doesn't just use English words. You know, we have words like entrepreneur, loaned from French, and many words loaned from other languages.
I'm pretty sure you'd find it in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Right, but they're loaned from other languages, same as how in New Zealand, you know, we say things like pakaru and mahi and whānau.
And I'm pretty sure that pakaru and mahi are not in the Oxford English Dictionary.
Right, so that's your definition.
That's the definition of the English language, as far as I know, if it was being learned and taught. I think that would be helpful that we just stick to one definition.
That was ACT Party's Simon Court on recognising a Palestinian state and Chloe Swarbrick being removed from the House for her speech on Palestine and te reo Māori in children's books. As clarification for our listeners, many reo Māori words can be found in the digital Oxford English Dictionary, including pakaru, mahi and whānau. We will link this in the interview's B-cast.
That was Simon Court from the ACT Party.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.